You're listening to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. The English Channel separates England and France by less than 21 miles. For marathon swimmers, the distance stands as the world's most historically significant and iconic athletic challenge. Many have tried. Not all have succeeded because of many factors. First, the water is cold. For the swim to be officially recognized, swimmers are only permitted to use goggles, a cap, a nose clip, earplugs, and a swimsuit. Absolutely no wetsuits allowed. And the ocean currents pose another challenge. Mechanicsburg native and marathon swimmer Jeannie Zappi earned her place among the few who have successfully completed the open water swim. We're joined by Jeannie Zappi. Ms. Zappi, welcome to the program.
Hi, Scott. It's good to be back.
That's right. We talked just a few years ago when you were planning this trip. It has been a while. Did the pandemic factor into that, or just what have you been doing to plan and prepare for the swim?
I got pretty lucky. I had about 3 weeks out of the water, but I coach at a pool in Carlisle. I coach a master's group at Keystone Aquatics, and we were able to, you know, keep people swimming. And I, after about 3 or 4 weeks, so I was able to swim, and I swam, you know, all last summer. I swim at the West Shore Y. They opened in June, and I didn't miss a beat. It's been a 3-year process since I booked a pilot in July of 2018, but a serious ramp up in training in November, December of 2020.
Swimming in a pool is a lot different than swimming in the English Channel, though, right?
Yeah, big time, big time. So I train my yardage in the pool. I ended up doing from January until July, I did 25 separate 10,000 yard swims. And that's 6 miles at a clip. And I did 25 of them. They took me about 2 hours and 45 minutes each. And then I did all my regular other training too, but those were my long swims. And then I also went on training trips to open water. Mm.
So you had to wait, though. Once the swim was scheduled, you had to wait for weather to clear. What was it like waiting for that?
I waited 2 full weeks. I was there for 5 days before my swim window opened. I had a swim window of August 28th to September 5th, where I had a number one spot. So I would get the first good weather, but the weather was not cooperating at all. There were high winds, and I waited a full 2 weeks, and I got in the water 2 hours before my window closed on Sunday night at 10 p.m. It was nerve-wracking. The name of my team that my crew and I are named the Eternal Optimists. So I just kept trying to live my team name and my motto to be an eternal optimist. And I wasn't going to train this hard and come this far and go home without swimming. I knew that was a possibility, but it actually made me more determined. I thought, if I get a crack and I get to go in because the weather clears, I'm not coming out. I'm not coming out unless somebody makes me come out.
You mentioned that you had that 2-hour window. You started at 10 o'clock at night. It was dark. I saw the video. And, you know, the current in that video, you look at the current, and, I mean, it looks rough. Why did you start at 10 o'clock at night? Because of that 2-hour window?
Well, yes. I had 2 hours left until my window closed. And then after that, my pilot was going to have to squeeze me in if he could, because he has other people queued up and other people still waiting from bad weather weeks, because no one swam for 2 weeks before I got in. Why did we start at 10? He picked it. He wanted me to finish in the daylight. So you know, if I was going to do a 14 to 15 hour swim, which was my estimate, you know, I guess I could have started in the, you know, in at 4 a.m., which is when he likes to start. But at 4 a.m., I was into the next person's window. So he put me in at 10 a.m., I mean, 10 p.m. So I swam in the dark, 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. And then the sun started coming up, thank God.
What does the pilot do?
The pilot maps the course. It's a very complicated channel with currents running along England and along France. And there's five lanes in the channel, like the British intercoastal, the British shipping lane, the separation zone, the French shipping lane, and then the French intercoastal. And so I'm following him. He's mapping my course at about a 90 degree angle across the currents and trying to get me there as fast as possible without getting swept, you know, in a direction. It's very, there's a lot of current.
I saw a map of where you swam. It's basically a Z shape from what I mean, as close to that as or a backwards S as much as I could tell. Most people probably think that you're just swimming straight across from England to France, and that's not the case at all.
That is not the case. It is because you can see, like, when I start to make the Z, I'm being pushed, you know, that way by the currents, and I'm going up at a kind of a northwest kind of angle. And then, you know, halfway through or part of the way through, the currents change, the tide changes, and I can make the turn and go downward. And then there's another turn or two to come into France, and that's all tide and current based. And I'm trying to swim cross current, but make progress.
If you have a question for Jeannie Zappi, who swam across the English Channel, maybe I shouldn't say across, but across, down, and across again, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So I understand that this did not exactly go as you had planned. What happened?
Well, I think that's the biggest thing about a swim like this, that it requires a lot of luck. You need to, you know, yes, I did all the training. I trained for every possible scenario I could think of. I interviewed friends who have done it. I checked off the boxes over the last several years, but still you need a lot of luck. You need the weather to cooperate. You need things to line up. And in the end, expect the unexpected. So I got to swim the whole beginning of the swim at night. You know, I was hoping for a few hours at night, maybe not eight, in a lot of high wind and current. I also prefer to breathe to my right, although I've trained to breathe to my left, and I had to breathe to my left because I was on the right side of the boat, because that's how the pilot could keep track of me at night. So I was breathing into the wind and breathing into the water and the chop. And it was 8 hours of constant navigation, trying to stay close enough, but not too far away from the boat, not to hit the boat, which I did three times. no big deal, but I did. The water temp was not an issue for me. I had trained cold water, so it was 64, and I felt great. Air was 64 as well. So, you know, yes, I did have to swim in not great weather. I had to swim a lot of it at night, and I had to breathe to my left. And so those were the things that made it a good challenge for me, I'll say.
64 degrees, you know, I think I don't know. Yeah. The only thing I have to compare it to is when I'm at the beach myself and check on the lifeguard stand and it says the water temp is 70 degrees or 71. And that feels just about right. 64 would seem to be something that if you're not used to it, that I don't know what water temp hypothermia can set in. But you said that you were trained, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
I expected it to be a bigger deal, although, you know, my friend and crew chief Deb and I did a lot of training trips, and we went to Ventura, California in May. It was cold, 60 degree water there. We went to Boston in July. It was 60 degrees there. And I also had an ice bath in my garage that I sat in. And I just slowly got myself used to cold water. And over the last several years, it's taken a long time. I didn't know what 14 or 15 hours in that temp would feel like because I've only ever been in that temp or less 6 to 7 hours. But it was the least of my concerns. And I was grateful for that. So it's amazing what your body can do and how you can train it and your brain and your mind. I mean, the whole thing was 90% mental by the time I got there.
Mm. So I'm curious, this took you 14 hours, 55 minutes, almost 15 hours.
Yep.
Was there any point during that swim that you thought to yourself, what was I thinking? Or maybe, maybe concerned that you weren't going to make it?
I can't believe I'm saying this, but no, there was never a time when I didn't think I was going to continue or not make it. I think Scott, the waiting period and the hoping and praying just for an opportunity to swim and knowing that it was a real possibility that I might not swim due to weather, it just made me that much more determined. And I thought, I'm doing this. I trained for all of it. And, you know, I jumped into dark water. I've done that before. I've done it lots of times. And I've swum in chop, a lot of wind, a lot of temperature. So all of the pieces I've done before, and I just had to persevere. So I persevered and I kind of attack it 30 minutes at a time. My crew feeds me every 30 minutes with my liquid carb electrolyte drink that they throw to me. And I just break it down into 30 minute increments, swim for 30 minutes. I get some information and I get a feed and then do another 30 minutes and another 30 minutes and another 30 minutes until the sun came out. And then I was good.
Let's take a phone call from Beth in Apex, North Carolina. Beth, you're on Smart Talk.
Hi, Miss Jeannie. How are you?
Hi, my Beth. How are you?
Hey, you. I think you just I'm good. You just answered my question, but I wanted you to talk a little bit more about your crew, how many are there, what they're doing, how you're fed, what's in your little bottle, that type of stuff. And also to say big, big congratulations to you, honey.
Thank you so much, honey. Beth is my dear friend. My crew was a dear friend named Deb Henson. And she was my crew chief. She came to me several years ago for a swim lesson and little by little became a friend and my crew chief. And then I had Susan Bianchi, who was a college roommate, and she's a body work, athletic, trainer type person. And then I had Kathy Wingert, who is a fellow swim mom. I coached her daughter at Messiah. And, Deb was in charge of pretty much running the show on the boat. Susan was mixing all the feeds and Kathy was my documentarian. So she was taking pictures, video, sharing it with the public and all that good stuff. What did I drink? I drank something called Infinite, which is an electrolyte and carb concoction, 10 ounces of Infinite every 30 minutes. That you gag down. And now actually it doesn't taste bad, but it's hard to feed on your back, kicking really hard, and like and drinking or eating like an otter. Everything else kind of went by the wayside. We didn't do anything else because it took too long to just drink the infinite. Maybe a banana with some ibuprofen with some Tylenol in it.
Good.
Okay, Beth, thank you very much for your phone call today. I think it's interesting that you said swimming on your back like an otter. Mm-hmm. I mean, did you think to yourself, well, if an otter can do it, I can do it?
Of course. And Scott, there were a couple seals out there that night and a dolphin. So
how that anticipated my next question. When people go into the unknown in the water, especially at night, my guess is that maybe not marathon swimmers because you've trained for it. But when people are thinking about it, they're also thinking about aquatic life. And, yep. You know, did you tell us a little bit about the running into dolphins and seals?
Well, as is always the case, my crew sees these things, but I don't. So there was a dolphin in the distance and they saw some seals popping up. There are no sharks per se in the English Channel, so that was a good thing. There are jellyfish. So in the separation zone, which was kind of in the middle-ish, I got stung a few times and I could see them going by me. That was it as far as aquatic life. A few fish. My crew said they saw eels, these little tiny eels that are on the surface. And I sort of felt them here and there. But I just don't think about it. You can't think about it. If you're an open water marathon swimmer, you can't really think about, you know, what might be there.
And we got an email from Messiah Lifeway Senior Women Lap Swimmers following Jeannie on Eternal Optimist Facebook videos and pics. Just say that they're so proud of Jeannie's accomplishment and that of her team. And bravo from Karen. And I just want to say, too, that everyone, I'm just has to say a huge congratulations. I mean, so how do you feel now that you've done it?
Thank you so much. I felt everybody's support and love, and especially at the nighttime, I kept saying to myself, I am not alone. I am not alone. I am not alone. I had so many people supporting me. And how do I feel now? I feel pretty elated. It feels surreal. I know I did it. I think it'll sink in someday. But I knew I could do it. I don't know. I just decided 3 years ago I could do it. And I think it's just a lesson to say, you know, if there's something you want to do, darn it, do it. You know, you figure out how to do it and do it. And I'm 55 and I don't think I could have done it when I was younger. So it's amazing what a 55-year-old body can do if you're pretty pigheaded and determined.
Jeannie Zappi, thank you very much. Congratulations again, and it was an honor talking to you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott, for having me.